Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 91 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So this is our first of two kind of special extra episodes that we're featuring this week. I don't think when we started this week we intended to have this many episodes going up, especially during the, not the production, it's not during production, what is it? During the, like, it's not off season, it's like on season.
During the airing season?
You know what I mean. Okay, then yes. While the actual episodes are airing, I didn't think we would
do more than busy. Well, we were busy last fall, but I don't think we were this busy.
No, I think this feels way busier. That being said, this is our first of two extra episodes that we're featuring this week on the Outlander podcast, both featuring someone that is associated with the Outlander show. And the first that we would like to...
In different degrees and ways.
So the first person we would like to feature in this week's trifecta of the Outlander podcast is a gentleman by the name of Robert Corrigan.
Yes, he is Outlander's very own award-winning pie man. He is owner of Mr. C's Pies. You'll hear in the interview, he's one of the only people who does what he does, at least of the type of thing that he does, in all of Scotland. And he's, as we said, award-winning. So
now that we're done dancing around what he actually does,
he was a pie man.
Let's bring him on and let him tell us.
Okay, Outlanders, we have a very special guest this episode. It is the truly outlandish baker, Robert Corrigan. Mr. Corrigan, welcome. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much, Ginger and Summer. Having a nice day with nice clear skies in Scotland.
The days are on their way to getting longer, correct? The nights, the sun's up for quite a bit?
Oh, yes. And today, again, has been very sunny, but the weather is going back to normal and I think rain tomorrow.
Ah, well, at least there's that.
That's why the place is so green. If there wasn't so much rain, we wouldn't have such lovely countryside. So.
Absolutely, and Scotland is very blessed for that.
Indeed.
So we'd like to start finding out a little bit more about you before you became a professional baker and chef and cook, but also as you did. So a little bit about your upbringing and your training.
But before we even mention that, you mentioned he's an outlandish baker, but in what regard do you bake for the show?
I did the bear bannocks for I don't know what scenes, but I believe it's being broadcast in the States next Saturday, where quite a bit of the food is shown on the series. I did bear bannocks, I did scotch pancakes, three different colours of breads in different shapes, very large 3.5 kilo chicken pies, as well as dummies of those pies so they could be used again and again. Outlander also supplied me with oak carved shapes of fish and shells and sort of prehistoric type looking fossil molds, and we made biscuits out of those, and we also had to do various other pies in different shapes and sizes.
Great. Can't wait to speak more about Outlander later on too. So growing up, how did you have a background in baking or any interest in food or cooking? How did you become interested in this?
I think I just was born with it. There is no history, as far as I'm aware, in my family or anyone in the industry. But as a small child of two, I used to, I believe, play with pots and pans on the floor. I used to make various cooking utensils when Lego came out when we were children, and made my first jam when I was 11, and that was it. I mean, my mum stopped making jam when I was 11 because hers never set. My first jam set, and she said, "That's it, you make it." And I've been making it ever since.
Oh my goodness. So many times when we hear of people, whether it's in cooking or baking or plants or whichever arena it is that people go on ultimately and make a living or have a passion for something, whether it was direct or indirect, we have found some kind of influence in the early years. Whether it's, as you said, someone taught you how to make jam and that was that, and you did it and you still continue to do it. And it just kind of gets you or got you started onto something, even though, as you said, you were born with this love for food and baking.
Well, it's just something that before I even remember it, I was told that I had this. I wanted to play with people used for cooking. I mean, I remember getting smacked. You're not allowed to do that to children now, unfortunately. But I was caught standing in a stool with a pot on the gas with plasticine chips.
Oh.
And I don't know, it's because I wanted to cook chips, but it was water and plasticine. But it was always somewhere in the back of the. I'm still as crazy now, so it's quite nice. To me, cooking should be fun, and Outlander was also good because I had done a little bit of work for the BBC 2 or 3 years before for a series called Garrow's Law. In fact, I did work each of the 3 years in the three series, and that, they ask you to do things that you have to think a little out of the box, because filming has got to be right. It's got to be consistent. There's so many cuts and retakes. So the lady who was buying for Garrow's Law had said, I think this was about 10 o'clock at night, "Could you do 2 dozen rolls for tomorrow morning for us?" And of course I said yes. And I said, "But why don't you go to Tapas, an organic bakery?" She says, "Theirs look too commercial." Now I've been there for a day, and it was all done by hand, but for whatever reason, she was not happy with what they could give her. And the trick was to try and make 3 dozen rolls, all exactly the same, so that whatever piece of roll was sitting on the plate and bitten out of, and they had to take it again and again, the roll that sat there new had to look exactly like the one that had been bitten in before.
So you've learned a lot about and have been affected by the continuity in film.
Well, it's continuity in the business. I mean, if you go to a restaurant and have a meal tonight, you'd like to think that next time you go back, it's going to be as good as the time before. So it's all to do with consistency and consistently producing the product to the highest standard you can all the time.
Indeed, and that is something that you have carried over in all the images that you sent us. They're stunning. They're just beautiful. You do amazing work.
Well, sadly, I'm a perfectionist, and that doesn't always help. Or so I am told. So I am told. But it's got to be right. It's got to be right. Otherwise, it will not go out.
Okay, so after your memory of having been born with this passion for food and for cooking and just working with food, did you go on to have your proper training, or did you just learn from through apprenticeships, or what kind of training or experiences did you get or have to then begin your professional career?
The week before I was 15, I started in a steakhouse with a company called Stackis, which many years later was bought over and swallowed into the Hilton Group. And some of the hotels that are in the UK under the Hilton banner were, in fact, originally Stackis. So the week before I was 15, I went in as a Saturday job, learnt to blanch chips, clean lettuce, cut tomatoes, and whatever. That was in the February, and by the June of that year, the chef went on holiday for a week, and I was cooking all the steaks, all the chicken, and all the meals for a full week, including the graduation Saturday of 100 dinners and 80 lunches. And I was still 15. I was still at school, and this went on for about 2 years, working for the same company. And then I ended up going into a hotel belonging to this company. And they suggested, well, I was asked to go to head office, and someone said, "Look, we think you should go into management." As a chef, you might find it difficult in years to come to go into management, but as a manager, you can always cook. So I went to college for 2 years doing an HND in hotel hospitality. And I've always cooked, and as a manager, if a chef was in trouble, I could just walk into the kitchen, ask him what he wants, get him out the mess, and that way I didn't have to deal with customers outside complaining because we stopped the complaints before they left the kitchen.
So you saw the benefit early on from actually, you had the opportunity, but you also saw the benefit of getting into management early on.
Well, I was someone else saw the opportunity I didn't see the opportunity because I was just happy cooking. But someone else did that, and after the training finished, well, after college, I went in and joined the management training, and it was usually about 16 to 18 months, and my training was 6 months because I'd spent so long in the company before joining the management training scheme that I'd covered all the kitchen, the bar, the restaurant. All I really had to do was housekeeping, reception, and accounts at head office. And I never did do housekeeping because I was then transferred down to a hotel in Bradford and spent a year learning banqueting for 750 people. And at the age of 22, I became the banqueting manager with 35 bar staff and 75 waiting staff as my team.
Before you got involved with Outlander or Ghetto's Law, how did your career develop into what it is today?
Well, the hotel career went on for some 20 years, and I was in hotel general manager. My first general management position was in a hotel called the Seaforth in Stornoway in the Outer Hebrides. And the previous company, Stacys, that I worked for, people had moved on to other companies, and they phoned me and said, "We've got a job down here we think you would like." So I ended up going there. Then someone else phoned and said, "We've got a job that we think you might like." So I ended up going to South Africa and opening the Galaxy Show Bar at Sun City when Frank Sinatra opened the Entertainment Centre that year, which I think was 1981. I then came back, not liking the apartheid regime and the way things were done. And there was a letter waiting for me from my previous boss, who was an Israeli, and said, "Look, I've got two hotel projects going on in Nigeria. They're still in the planning stage. We'd like you to get involved." So I ended up going to Israel, working there with the architects, specifying all the equipment and drawing up the training programs for all the staff, and then went to Nigeria. The hotels were still well under construction, and we put the whole thing together. And I opened the two hotels and lost my job with people coming into my office with machine guns and tear gas with a military coup. But we survived that and we came back to the UK, and I ended up going back to Stacys because, again, I ran into the managing director, and he said, "Look, come and see me." And I spent another 18 months with them, and then moved on. Because in the hotel industry, to learn, you really do have to move because different hotels have different strengths, different weaknesses, and you're learning all the time. I then gave up hotels eventually and decided I wanted to do something different. And I used half of my flat for private meetings, private conferences, and fine dining in Glasgow. And I did all the cooking. And that's where the Garrow's Law situation came in. That unfortunately had to close down because I had neighbours who were not very sympathetic to what I was doing, shall we say. I then went to Turin with Slow Food, Glasgow, and I was one of the 30 chefs in inverted commas. Attending Terra Madre in 2006, and I sat there listening to farmers complaining about chefs and hoteliers and restaurateurs using all the prime cuts of meat, but there's all this other wonderful meat on the animals that gets neglected, and there's only so many sausages and burgers they can produce. So I came back. I had nothing to do, well, nothing concrete to do, so I decided I wanted to do something to help use this meat, I decided on pies. This type of pie is an English style pie. It's actually a melted Mowbray pie, but because it's got PGI status, we're not allowed to use that name. I phoned a very well-known company down in Nottinghamshire within the Melton Mowbray region, and I went down for a day and spoke to the family and saw what they did. And then I came back and I played with flour and lard and bits and pieces and started making pies and giving them to people to get feedback. And then I went back down with some pies and they criticized my pastry. And I said, look, I came down here to see the technique. I did not come down to copy what you are doing because I just, it's my product, it's my pastry. We are still friends. In fact, they have split up, some of the brothers have split up, but I'm still friends with them. And but I only spent 16 hours with them. And from that, I developed my own company with my own products, and from the website you can see what we produce. And that was really it. And we just keep playing with flavors and playing with fillings, and working with Fortnum and Mason in London just now on pies with foie gras and fresh truffle to be launched later this year.
Wow, you have to definitely keep us, let us know about that, because any of your new products, we'd love to help show the beautiful pictures of.
Well, once we get them once we get them out of the oven and get them
Yeah, okay.
photographed, I will happily share it. And obviously, once we do something like that, we'll put it on the website.
It's not many people that can say they lost their job at gunpoint with tear gas. Yeah.
Yes, and I mean, we were actually taken out of the hotel. I insisted we were out the back door, but we were taken to the Nigerian Security Organization, and I was sort of interrogated a little bit. Then I was kept getting taken back until we found a way of letting them know that there was nothing to answer. But again, it was a political thing because the hotel was owned by the previous government, so therefore it was an opportunity for the new military government to show that they were doing something. Just one of those things. But a great experience and no regrets on it.
Being confronted with something like that, nothing else is, you roll with the punches. You have your work, you do your best, but it's a job is still a job, and it's not a gun pointed at your face.
Well, you see, it's not a job, it's a way of life. I mean, the hotel was your life. I mean, there was days when I was 21, 22, you suddenly realized you had not been outside the door for 3 days. You were maybe doing back-to-back work. So some weeks I worked over 100 hours. This was not my business, but at the end of the day, to do the job to the standard that I wished it to be done, as well as my boss, that was there as it was required to make sure that we were happy with what we did. I mean, it was very important the customers were happy, but I also had to be happy.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's really a way of life, and it's not just a job. It's never been just a job.
Now you are still pursuing your passion, your livelihood, and it's just not in that same context.
No, we're just making pies now.
Well, I wouldn't say just making pies, but
Well,
yeah, not.
someone said that to me. I asked a young chap, would you like to work for me? And he said, oh, well, is it just making pies? And I said, yes. So that's the reason I use that, because
Oh,
it stuck in
okay.
my head. Well, yes, it is just making pies, but it's making pies I mean, there's no one else in Scotland making this quality of product. There are in England, but certainly not in Scotland.
And from what we've seen, it's just, I mean, on film, in your images, they're stunning. They almost look fake. And I think that's probably, even though it sounds weird, I think that is maybe, I hope that you take that as a compliment,
Well,
because they look
some of them are
stunning.
fake, so but you can't tell the difference. I mean, as I said, I had to do fake pies for Outlander, and I also had to do, because they had to use props that because once somebody cut into a pie, they only had so many pies of full of chicken, because A, to keep food wastage down and cost down, but I also had to produce about a dozen of these large pies with the circles on top that you've seen from the photographs. They were filled with flour so that they could keep up to 6 months. In fact, for Christmas, about one of the highlights of last year, not just getting the business for Fortnum and Mason, which as it's the Queen's grocer and it's It's a business meeting that's been going since 1709, and it's one of the most prestigious shops in London. We had dummy pies sent down to adorn some of their Christmas windows. And that, to me, cheered me up more than the order, which obviously the order was worth money, but to have our pies displayed in a Fortnum & Mason window was just, for me, wonderful.
It will never be just pies for Outlander fans. You've already mentioned a little bit about how you became involved with Outlander, but tell us how you were contacted, if you can. Tell us everything you can about joining that team.
Well, I got a phone call from a lady, an assistant buyer for the Outlander series. And she uses a butcher in Glasgow for various bits and pieces of meat and carved skins and things for props. And she said, look, I'm really looking for pies. Now, they had been my local butcher for 27 years. So they told her I was no longer in Glasgow. They didn't know where I was, but Hopetoun Farm Shop sold my product. So she went over to the East Coast, bought some pies from Hopetoun Farm Shop, and then she phoned me and said, I'm from Outlander. Now, I shouldn't say this, but I did not know what Outlander was.
That's okay.
I had to Google when I got home, and then I realized what it was. But she said, look, I'm looking for pies. And I said, well, that's fine. I said, we can do pies. We can do what you want. I said, I did some stuff for Garrow's Law and for the Wicker Tree. She goes, oh, I didn't realize you'd done that. I said, well, yes. She said, well, that's fine. I said, well, I can do bread for you. I can do anything, really anything you want. I said, you just need to ask. And that's how it started, from that one conversation. And she sent me some emails with stills of pictures from history of pies and various things that they would like to have sort of created. Because of the nature of Outlander and the fact that it's time travel, then they can do anything they want, because something can be picked up out of context because of out of time, but it's what the directors wanted. I mean, it's like Garrow's Law. The strange thing was that I was asked to make horse stew, but with the scandal the other few years ago, I used shin of beef, and I was doing this from home. My first gold award and everything was done in a domestic kitchen, still under environmental health coverage, but domestic oven, domestic kitchen, and I did all the Garrow's Law stuff from there. And I was asked to do a pie that was burnt inside but not outside. Now, that's not possible, but I found a way of doing it. I imagined what it should be like, and sadly the pies that I produced for them that actually got airtime, because the story was it was a new cook, and the main characters were sitting down to eat, and they couldn't actually cut into the pie because I'd made the pastry thicker and all the rest of it. And the feedback was the director was delighted, because they didn't know until they tried to do it what was going to happen, and the reactions of the actors was exactly what the director wanted without them actually having to act. So that was good. And hopefully I can send you, I've got three or four stills of that, so I'll try and get that to you, so you can at least see from something three or four years ago in the BBC that the products existed. And sadly, this sloppy horse stew got more airtime, I think, than all the other products I did for them, because there was a mutiny of the sailors because they were being fed this terrible food. And I have to say, the food tasted absolutely superb. A friend phoned me and said, you didn't do that. I said, well, yes, I did. I said, but it was actually shin of beef, and it was really delicious, but it was supposed to be sloppy horse meat.
So how do you make it appear to be burnt on the inside of a pie and not the outside?
Well, I was actually making a venison and smoked venison pie for someone who smoked venison and smoked pheasant as their business. And we parted because her business finished, and I had in the freezer a bag of shredded, pure dried smoked venison. So I literally cut that up and stuck it in the middle of the pie because it was brown and didn't look particularly good. It was wonderful tasting, and it was meant to be chopped up and mixed through fresh venison, but by putting that in the centre of the pie, it means that when the pie was cut open, you had this dark, burnt-looking mass in the middle, surrounded by wonderful fresh pork. So I got rid of the venison out of my freezer, and they were happy.
So you mentioned that you did some food for the erotic horror film The Wicker Tree. What? So
I only saw the film 8 or 9 weeks ago for the first time. This was done 4 years ago. It was filmed in Edinburgh, and I suffered watching the whole film. And I think there was about, I don't know, 20 seconds of this large table laden with food, and that was my food. But I had to suffer about an hour and a quarter of the film before I saw it. I didn't know what the film was about. I had no idea until I watched it, and I probably won't watch it again.
So what kind of food? You said it was a big table laden with food. What kind of foods did they ask you to make?
Quite peculiar. Because it was called The Wicker Tree, then I had to make bread in the shape of leaves and twigs, etc. They had jellies, which I didn't see on the table, but again, it was a very quick glimpse, but jellies in multicolours. So I had fancy moulds with maybe 6 colours of jelly layered, as well as pies and other food, but the majority was jellies, pies, and bread.
Actually, I want to see that just to see the food, just to see the placement.
Well, as I said, I don't have a copy of it, so therefore it was on TV. So I only saw it that one time, and that was it. But you know, to suffer the film to see it again, I don't think I will bother.
So you mentioned a number of different things that you types of products, if you will, that you make. You mentioned the jams and the jellies and the pies and the breads. Is there something that you feel you have a passion for? Number one, a passion for more than making other things? And number two, is there something you think you're maybe better at than other things?
I don't make everything. There's lots of things I've never tried to make. What I make, I am told I am good at. I was brought up with fresh food, so something like the slow food movement, I am a member of it, and I agree with everything that they say, but I didn't learn anything from being a member of it, because the way I was brought up, there was no refrigerator, there was everything was cooked fresh on a daily basis, or you got it the second day, but it wasn't, there was no fridge, so it didn't keep for weeks, there was no freezers to put in to keep stuff. So cooking fresh every day, even when I managed a hotel, I mean, when I got home at night, I cooked a meal from scratch, and I still do. I mean, I cook for the staff. I mean, every day we sit down, we start work about, well, it's quite late, we start work about 3:30, and we all sit around the table and eat whatever I've cooked for all of us. So, and breakfast is the same. So it can be a leg of lamb, it could be savoury rice, it could be pasta, salmon, whatever really the staff want, that they like, then I'm happy to cook. So that way every day I'm still cooking something for other people.
Is there something you haven't done that you would like to try?
That's a difficult question, because I haven't travelled all around the world to see things that I might want to try. I don't know. That's a question I can't give you an answer straight away, because that's a question I haven't given any thought to.
You mentioned travel. Are there some places you have been to that you find particularly inspiring and that have influenced what you do, or that you would make you want to visit that place again?
Italy, Spain, Portugal, Germany. Israel I probably will never go back to, but I've spent 9.5 months of my life there between working and then going back 2 or 3 times. When my mum passed away, I took some of her ashes and scattered them outside the old Cataract Hotel in the Nile, because she loved Egypt, as do I. And then I flew to Israel and scattered the rest in the Garden of Gethsemane, overlooking the Dome in the Rock, which to me is a very special building within the Muslim community. But sadly, as a tourist, you can no longer visit it. But but Israel, the Middle East, was a big influence on me, because again, that I was still quite young then. And while Israel was in Lebanon, Britain was in the Falklands. But it was there that I learned all about the Middle East and spices. That was a big influence, different spices, different techniques in cooking. And everywhere I go, I try to learn some of the cooking. When I was in Singapore last year for 4 or 5 days and staying in the hotel, I ended up in the kitchen with a chef learning to cook some sort of street food type food of Singapore. Everywhere I go is an opportunity.
I like that. And if it's not, you make one.
Well, to go back to that, back to Nigeria, I mean, there was nothing there. I mean, the supermarkets had virtually nothing in them, so you had to buy meat from various sources, including buying wild boar and deer from the hunters coming out of the bush. When I came home for a short break, I took back 100 packets of seeds, and we started growing all our own herbs. I made my own soft cheese for the first time. If you wanted marmalade for breakfast, you had to buy oranges and sugar and make it. You could not buy marmalade. I had a chef who came out from the UK, and he said, "I can't cook this and I can't cook that." And I said, "Look, here is a list of what I can get you. Just tell me what you can cook." And it's just like going to your house, to your store cupboard, and thinking, "What have I got? What can I make today?"
Having some basic skills and knowing what you can do with basics, you use what you have.
Well, yes. I mean, again, in Nigeria, I got home one night, I had 14 people for dinner for the house, including my banker and various other people. And there was no electricity. There was no generator fuel. We had total blackout. So I sent them down to the club to have a drink, and another manager from the other hotel stayed with me, and we lit a barbecue, and I did, it wasn't the most exciting meal, but I did a chicken broth, and then chicken cacciatore with baked potatoes and vegetables. We just lit the house with candles, and then I did mango flambé all outside in the barbecue. And the chef refused to eat, because he told everybody down in the club, you know, about the country, and you can't do this and you can't do that, and we're probably going back to sandwiches. So he just could not understand where all this food came from. You think,
oh my goodness, could you, next time you're in the US, could you come to our place and show us how to cook on a griller?
Easiest thing in the world. The thing
oh
is,
my goodness.
You don't need, I mean, it's lovely to have all the utensils, but my attitude is a knife and something to cut on, and we can eat.
Mm. You sent us some beautiful pictures, or some, I should say, some pictures of some of your beautiful utensils that we'd love to share in our post for this interview. Could you tell us a little bit about how old some of your utensils are?
Well, there's a black griddle or girdle, using the Scots word. Now that's over 100 years old. I bought that in 1987 in an antique shop, and I use it for drop scones and pancakes and various things. And that I use for all the girdle scones and bear bannocks for Outlander. So that particular piece of cooking utensil was used a lot for the food that I did for Outlander. I still have the mixing bowls that I got when I was 11, 12 years old. I still use the pastry cutters from that age. I just look after what I have. And everywhere I go, I buy wooden spoons or rolling pins, or just as a keepsake, I'll never use almost any of them, but it's a nice keepsake when you travel to a different country and bring something back. But the utensils are all you. I mean, the knives that I use and still use, I got in 1980 and 81. And every one of those knives are still in fairly pristine condition.
Wow, so you take care of your tools then.
Yes, because it's like any professional. You need the right equipment to do the job. But there are occasions when you have nothing and you can still do it.
What kind of schedule do you have? The baker down the street is going to be in there cooking at 3:30 or 4 in the morning.
Well, normally it's quite civilized. I start work at 9 o'clock, and most days we try to finish about 4:30. So it's very civilized. However, tomorrow I'm in at 6 because I've got to get work done before I travel to Brussels. At Christmas, I probably worked 130 hours a week for 3 weeks. I did all the baking of every pie that left our unit to go to all our customers. I sometimes slept in my van outside and got a member of staff to knock the door when the alarm went so I could go back in and adjust the ovens or do whatever was needed. And some nights I didn't have any sleep. But that has to be done. I mean, when I was working from home, this was up to 2011, I had 240 pies to make for a company called Inveraw Smokehouse, who I still make pies for today. But I was only able to bake 24 an hour, and I had 240 to bake for them.
Yeah.
You can do the maths, but they had to be baked, they had to be jellied, they had to be cooled down, they then had to be wrapped and packed and then shipped out. So I didn't sleep for 3 days. I didn't sit down for 3 days, because had I sat down, I wouldn't have fallen asleep immediately.
Do you have any backup? Like, do you have somebody who steps in if you're down? I mean, if it's only you doing it, what happens if you can't make your pies?
Well, I'm going to Brussels and the pies are being baked now because I've got two guys who have been with me for over a year. They've learned the job very well, and I have every confidence. But one of them is also on holiday in Poland, so there's only one going to be there for the next 4 days, and he's quite capable of doing what needs to be done. Because again, I believe in everybody doing all the jobs so that if something does happen, they are all capable of helping each other.
So cross-training.
Multitasking, multi-skilling, it's essential. I mean, if you run a small hotel, instead of getting casual staff in, banqueting staff, I train my housekeeping staff to wait tables and work the bar. So it meant that they had an opportunity of earning extra money, especially in the quieter months. And it also meant that at any time we had a multi-skilled staff throughout the hotel.
Filming finished with Outlander last year.
Yes, so they're about to start again on series two, or book two, book two.
Series two, book two. Do you know if you'll be taking part in that and providing anything?
It is hopeful. Another reason, I mean, I believe, because I've never read any of the books, I believe a lot of it is stationed in France and Versailles, around that sort of area. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, that's correct.
So there'll be a lot more refined baking to be done. I don't know what. We've had a conversation. I don't know what they will ask me to do. But again, you know, the sort of sourdough bread exercise that I'm doing in the next 4 days, I'm doing that for myself, but it will also help if I have to do a particular type of bread or a baguette type thing. I don't know, but I also went to college again in 2003 and did pulled sugar work, made sugar baskets and fruit, bunches of grapes and bananas, whatever, out of pulled sugar, and also tempering chocolate and making chocolate eggs and molds and things. So I have those skills, but they're for me. They've never been for business as such. But if I am asked to do something for Outlander using those particular mediums, I have the skills to do it, and I have the equipment to do it.
Did you have anything to do with that giant pie with a peacock perched on it?
No. Sorry.
I'm kind of relieved.
Sorry. a giant pie.
It was a giant, like, meat pie, I think, with a peacock, like a stuffed peacock on top of it. Oh. It was moderately horrific to look at.
Well, the stuffed peacock would obviously come from somewhere else. And as I've never seen any Outlander at all, I could not tell you whether that was my product or not.
Mm.
Because once it leaves my unit, I have no idea what they have done with any of it.
Well, what was the largest pie you made for them? Like, this was like the size of...
This is at least, like, probably 3 feet long.
Yeah, it was round, giant, like, probably a foot tall and massive.
Not me.
So we don't know how things will work out, but we will be, as we've told you offline, we will be visiting Scotland later next month. Would there be a chance to get some first-hand eyewitness accounts of your pies?
Of course. Of course.
Excellent.
But I think you'll have to be in my area, because I think one of the castles is in Stirlingshire, and that's only about less than an hour's drive from you, probably 4 to 5 minutes drive.
Oh my goodness! So we'll definitely have to make sure that that's on our itinerary.
I mean, where I am is very very easy to get to from Stirling, Perth area. I mean, a lot of the filming, I believe, was also done in Hopetoun Estate. Hopetoun Estate is owned by Lord Hopetoun's family, and was the first house was built in 1690, and they opened a farm shop on the 27th of May 4 years ago, and I've been supplying them and the family with pies since the day the farm shop opened. And I believe a lot of the filming was done on the estate, because it's a fairly large estate. Once I know your itinerary and I know where you're going,
yes,
then that would be very easy, and you know, I'd be delighted to be able to see you, both of you.
Oh, perfect. It would be amazing to be able to meet you and see some of your stuff up close. That would be great.
Smell them. They all look like they smell so good.
Well, I'm attending an Outlander event on the 16th of May at Crieff Hydro. So the utensils and things that you saw in the photographs, I'm taking there, and I'm going to reproduce one of the dummy pies plus some bare bannocks, so that those who are attending this event can actually see some of the food firsthand.
Oh, nice. Yes, that's the Outlandish gathering. We unfortunately will be arriving just after the gathering. We know of people who will be there, and we are thrilled for you and everyone who will be able to be there. That it just sounds like such an amazing opportunity.
I'm looking forward to it. The sad thing is the hotel is not allowing anyone to sell anything, so I can't even sell any pies to anyone who wants to have one of the same recipe, because the hotel is being a little bit precious about everything.
Well, you can sell them to us.
We won't be at the hotel.
Maybe I would just have to give them to you.
Oh, well, that we will not say no.
That's the right answer. That's the right answer.
We try not to say no very much. We try to live life with a yes and it's brought a lot of amazing opportunities. So we try and say yes a lot.
You know what they say, if you don't ask, you don't get.
Oh, yes. We agree.
Oh,
we
yeah.
Agree.
My first trip to Egypt, I didn't like the guide we had. I told the company I wanted to change guides, and they said, you can't. I said, yes, I can. he turned out to be amazing. He put me in touch with someone in Cairo. I've been in each of the three big pyramids. I've been inside the Step Pyramid, which is the oldest pyramid in the world, and it was opened specially for myself to go in through the network of people that I now have there. I went to Amarna for Akhenaten's area, and I had the head of antiquities, and he said, just tell me what you want to see and I will get the keys for you.
Oh my gosh.
Clearly need to cook more, and because that clearly opens doors that I cannot.
But that was all because I said I want to change to a different guide. And through that guide, I learned. And I've spent days at bakeries in Egypt and watching the guys work, and by gosh, do they work hard. But through that, I've now got friends there, have had for 20 years. And when I go over, I take stuff, and I, using your word, stuff, and I teach one of the guys' wife. I took a pasta machine 1 year, and I taught how to make fresh pasta. I taught how to make crepes, and that's it. I mean, everywhere you go, you learn to cook and share experiences, and that's the fun.
Speaking of experiences, you mentioned that you will tomorrow you're leaving for Brussels, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that is under the next category of question. What are some of your upcoming events or something on your schedule that you are able to tell us about, some things you'll be involved in?
And what are you taking to Brussels with you so that you can earn things?
My head. I think you will see from the emails I sent you, I've got a reasonably good memory.
Yeah, you do, definitely.
It's like when I went to learn about the pies, I didn't take a single note the whole day I was there.
Oh my gosh.
But I memorized what I needed to memorize. I'm going there to make a little bit better my knowledge of sourdough and maybe some of the techniques of it. And there's 30 different bakers going from around Scotland and some from around the UK. So there's other people to talk to. And just exchange ideas or knowledge. But I'm purely going to learn about the bread and maybe different ways of dealing with sourdough. But we're also spending a day for good quality patisserie and chocolate work. And again, that may become useful for anything that I might be asked to do in the next series of Outlander. I don't know whether I will be asked, but I'd be delighted to do something. But there's also a wonderful festival in Fife called the Crail Food Festival, and that's on 14th, 15th of June. It's become an annual event, and I will be there on the Saturday selling pies. And what I tend to do is also sell them in thirds. So someone buys a third of a pie, which is, it's a good meal, a third of a pie, but it also means they don't have to buy a full pie to enjoy the product. Last year I was there and I sold out within the first 3 hours. I don't do many events as such. The Outlander one I particularly wanted to do because of my little bit of involvement with the series. And I'm doing a few tastings at Loch Leven's Larder, again in the borders of Fife, near Mary Queen of Scots country, quite near Linlithgow. But I don't tend to do lots of events because my products I supply to companies, farm shops, and outlets who then sell them to the public. I don't tend to do many exhibitions and food shows because if I'm left with any product, I can do nothing with it. I don't have a shop. We bake to order. I mean, if you ordered 200 pies for next week, we would bake them one day, finish them the next, and ship them that same day for the next day for you. So, in fact, the Environmental Health came last year unannounced and said, can we have a sample? I said, well, you can have one, but it's raw. It's not baked.
Yeah. You have to order one, please.
Yeah, and actually she phoned and ordered one for the following week.
So Mr. Corrigan, we're here. Can we sample your pie? Oh, sorry there. You can order one. Okay. We'll order one for next Tuesday. We're going to come in unscheduled.
It was to take away for testing, but the fact is that we only bake to order. So, the only pies we will have in the fridge, like tonight, there are pies for London and a few other places for tomorrow to be shipped. But they were baked today to go away tomorrow. And we are not baking. We don't bake every day because most customers, London's different. They want 3 orders a week, but most customers want their deliveries on a Thursday, so they've got them for the weekend. So we tend to bake on a Sunday for London, and then we bake a Tuesday and a Wednesday for the rest of our clients. Because of the hygiene situation, we tend not to make pies when we're baking. We will make pies and then we stop that work and then we will bake. And that way it's in a safe environment.
So really the thing to take away from this is the way to get around the environmental health people is to have a bake-to-order shop, so they never really have samples on hand to test. You can make a special one for them that you know is 100% going to pass whatever test they put on it.
Well, yes, but the nice thing is that I've never made anyone ill. I've never killed anyone yet that I know of. And touch wood, the complaint level is virtually non-existent.
Again, we haven't seen it firsthand, and we definitely haven't tasted it yet, but your work looks amazing, and it is in everything you've shared with us, and we're going to share as many as we can in our post, was beautiful, just stunning.
Thank you very much for that. That's very kind of you to say so.
Oh, it's not kind. It's the truth. I mean, it may sound kind. I'm not meaning it to be kind, but I'm glad it is. If someone wants to potentially put in an order for some pies or come talk to you about something.
Well, I mean, do you ship internationally or just in the UK?
Can't ship it. I mean, to get food into the US is nigh impossible unless you're doing large quantities and through a third party within the United States. I mean, I have shipped pies out, but someone's collecting them from Singapore and taking them out to Singapore. But at the moment, I don't have an export situation. Certainly within the UK, the big downfall is the courier. I mean, we have to courier everything in sort of polystyrene boxes and chill packs and things to make sure they arrive in good condition and in temperature. And that's a cost of £10.20 plus VAT before you buy a pie. So that makes it fairly expensive. The sad thing is 34 pies can be bought and the courier charge is still the same.
Ah, funny.
So whether it's one pie or 34 pies, it's the same price. So that makes it not easy for an individual to order two or three pies. I mean,
sure.
I sell to individuals, if people are passing and they want them, they can order them, and then when they pass by, I'm happy to sell them to them. We do pies for weddings for individuals. If I have an order for pies for June, the 6th of June, for a wedding that was just confirmed yesterday. But again, for the quantity they are buying, the courier charge is negligible. But for someone wanting one or two pies, it really just isn't cost effective.
Do they freeze well?
Yes.
There's no other answer, I guess. Well, I'm just thinking, I'm just in my head plotting, if somebody wanted to make it cost efficient to order your pies and they bought like 30 of them to, you know, offset the shipping cost, whether or not if I put them all in the freezer, they would freeze and keep.
Yes, I mean, there's a company called Donald Russell. You can Google them. And if you look up, if in their search, once you get onto the site, if you look up C450, P450, and G450, that will bring you to the three products I make for them. And in 4 years, they have had 30,000, and they sell them as a frozen product.
Oh, wow. If someone wanted to get in touch with you, whether it's to order something, most likely to order something, or to have a chat, maybe. What's the best way that someone can get in touch with you?
Email through the website. The website has my email address, and that's the easiest way to contact me.
Can you share your website with our listeners?
Yes, certainly. It's www.mrcspies.co.uk. So Mr. C's Pies.
Perfect. Short and sweet and extremely reflective of everything that you do.
I find it difficult because when I give that out, a lot of people think I'm saying tea and something, and you think, but it's Mr. C's Pies. It's fairly, yeah. And this is not individuals who know nothing. This is maybe someone trying to do something. You think, well, you know, I'm a pie company, so why would it be a tea? But anyway, it's a fairly straightforward address, and the email is robert@mrcspies.co.uk.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for spending some of your very valuable time on a weekend, on a Sunday, especially just before you leave the country. We really appreciate your spending your time with us and speaking with us about your work.
Well, it's been a delight, really. I feel as if I know you guys very well, even though we have never met. But from the very first time, I was comfortable, because it's not something I would normally do. But I had to resurrect Skype from 4 years ago to do this call. So I did it yesterday because I haven't used it, because I have no need to use it. And as for my Sunday is a normal working day.
Fair enough.
I work 7 days a week, and I do all my paperwork from home, so I'll probably be working till about 2-3 in the morning. Because I'm going away, I need to make sure that everything is ready for the guys so that they can do their work and they don't have to worry about stuff that I would normally do for them. That's the easy part. The nice thing is that for 4 days I will not see a pie.
There you go. And I think that's the perfect note to end on. And we look forward to meeting you and getting a gander at some of your pies.
I would like to guarantee that we will meet wherever you are, and if you can't get to me, I will try and get to you.
Aww. Oh, that is too sweet. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a delight to speak with you as well.
Thank you again, Mr. Corrigan, for joining us. We look forward to meeting you. And thank you all for listening. We look forward to our next episode, which is a very special one as well. Another interview, which we hope you will enjoy. Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter @OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.